Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And I spend every waking moment helping other people do the same, including right now, as we have a guest. His name is Vinny Grant. And Vinny came across personal development at 18 years of age, a lot earlier than me, and it quickly became his passion. It was then that he realized he had a lot of personal baggage, which he committed to free himself from. Over the years, Vinny followed many disciplines, practices, meditation, and healing methodologies, and from them developed his unique way of removing trauma from people's lives. I met Vinny at a meal, a birthday meal. My friend Debbie Poverino is also a previous podcast guest on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. You should check that episode out, Debbie Poverino, if you're interested in quitting smoking. And it was Debbie's birthday, and me and Vinny ended up sitting opposite each other in this Middle Eastern restaurant. There was a belly dancer and everything. It was a fantastic night, and we got talking. And you know, when it comes to the journey that we're all on to try to be someone that doesn't drink alcohol, look, we've all suffered from trauma, right? There's some reason trauma related that we're deciding to neck back that bottle of tequila or wine or whatever your poison is, right? So, and trauma isn't I was raped, my daughter got killed, I came back from the war. You know, the stereotypical view of trauma. Trauma is everything from, from my own personal example of moving from England to Wales when I was 10 years of age, like super traumatic. And those traumatic experiences, they shape your personality, they shape your beliefs, your values, the whole nine yards. And eventually we become people who are drinking, who are kind of zombified, switched off. So it's really important when we know that we find communities like Strive, we are very open and vulnerable, and we talk and we find the courage to talk about our lives and stuff. But it's also equally important to understand where this trauma comes from and how it's impacting us on our lives and how to deal with it, how to either dial the volume down on that trauma or in Vinny's case, eradicate it, you know, completely. You know, that's what Vinny's game's about. Vinny's game is, you've got trauma in your life that's impeding you, let's get rid of it, okay? Let's get rid of it. So I really enjoyed my talk with him. I thought it was fantastic. I'm going to be speaking to his wife as well, who's another healer. I'll be talking to her in a couple of weeks' time. So I hope you enjoyed it. We're in a bit of a transitory period here at the Truth About Alcohol and Strive. I think I said last week on the podcast that from September the 1st, the current Strive members are going to go over to a monthly subscription model, £40 a month. So anyone right now that's wanting to join Strive or join the Taste or do the intensive, everything's going to be on hold until I pull my finger out of my bum and change the new structure, create the new Strive, the new Truth About Alcohol. And when I do, I think it's going to be rocking. I think it's going to be amazing. We're going to get our content under more eyeballs than ever before. And we're going to be creating more people that don't drink alcohol than ever before. And I'm hoping that Vinny Grant is going to be a big part of that. Because it's people like Vinny who are the experts on this show, right? I'm the host, right? But people like Vinny are the experts. And when you do come to Strive and the Truth About Alcohol and you take the taster and you take the intensive, it's me, isn't it? Like, you're learning from me and my experience. But what if Vinny was to be part of that? What if Vinny was to give you some time and help you with your trauma? What if Vinny was to create an online training course? So that's the type of stuff that we're looking at right now at the Truth About Alcohol, and we hope it comes to fruition very shortly, and we hope that Vinny will be a part of it. So without further ado, I'll shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of Vinny Grant. Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I am not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I am someone that doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same. Today, helping me do that is Vinny Grant. How's life, Vinny?
Really good, thank you.
Good, good. We got online eventually, didn't we?
We certainly have, my friend. Thank you for having me.
No problem. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Right, I'm going to start off. For people who can't see, who's not watching the video, oh, by the way, if you want to watch a video, get over to Lee Davey YouTube and you can watch the video. You see me and sexy Vinny instead of listening to us. I got a load of emotions here, Vinny. Look how many there are.
All right, okay.
Okay, right. So I'm going to ask you a couple of emotions. And I'm going to ask you if you can remember a time when you felt that emotion.
Yeah.
Or whether it's an emotion that, you know, kind of like happens quite a lot with you, just your general feeling around emotions. It could be something like happy, and you could be like, yeah, I'm happy all the time, and I think happiness is really important, etc.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
It's my way of doing an icebreaker, which is completely the opposite of icebreaking. So I'm supposed to put you at ease, but I'm not going to. Right, here's the first one. Disappointed. When was the last time you were disappointed, Vinny?
Last time I felt disappointed. The last time I felt disappointed. The last time I felt disappointed. Now, I have a view. I have a philosophy. My philosophy for life is things happen the way they are supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a reason for everything. Now, in the moment, I may not be able to see that or get it, but through evidence and through life experience and observation, it's become very clear to me that what appears to be a negative experience in the moment serves a bigger purpose. Often there's a learning that comes from it, or it leads to something that is positive. So trying to find a disappointment is really difficult, my friend.
Because it's mired underneath all good stuff.
To try and go back. I mean, there was a time with a business quite some time ago that I was very disappointed. I made some emotional decisions. I shouldn't have got involved in this particular business. I didn't reflect. I didn't ask myself the right questions. It was purely emotional. And I got very burnt because of it. But my mind's having to cast back, because my philosophy for life now is everything happens for a reason.
Okay.
For my highest good.
But you can't just flick a switch, right? You can't be like someone who allows disappointment to, you know, manifest itself in poor decisions and kind of like drags you down emotionally, to somebody who's like, yeah, man, like disappointment don't bother me. Like, really, how did it get from A to B?
And it, you know what? It is an instant every time.
Right.
It is an instant every time.
Oop.
Sorry about this.
Someone's trying to ring you, Vinny.
They are, my friend, yeah. How do I? Bear with me just for a second. Sorry about that.
Your Skype's on. Kick your Skype off, I think.
Yeah, okay.
So it doesn't happen all the time.
You know what? Sometimes I have to remind myself, but I catch it very early. Because I ask myself a question. I ask myself, what is the positive here? What is the positive? Why could this be happening right now? Or just wait and see. Just wait and see.
How does that happen?
I reframe it through conscious awareness. Just being aware and not being emotional or overreacting or reacting to things from the past and expecting something negative or become negatively focused. So it's through being more conscious. That's my experience.
How do you become more conscious?
There's an inner world and there's an outer world. The outer world is all the emotional things that we respond to. We have a thought, we think, we imagine things, we engage in this theater of the mind where we reflect on situations that have happened in the past, what we think might happen in the future, and it triggers all of these emotions that we experience on a day-to-day basis. So that's the outer world. Now, the inner world is that feeling that we get inside when we say, make a decision to do something, and inside, we know it's not the right thing. We know we shouldn't really do it, but we find ourselves still doing that something.
Mm-hmm.
And often we even know what the outcome's going to be, but we still do it. Now, it's my belief that we need the lesson and the learning from that experience. That's why we do it. It's why an aspect of ourselves allows us to have the experience. So what I've learned to do over time is to listen inside, is to listen to that good feeling. So if I have a situation that doesn't go right in my life, like I have a talk and a presentation this evening, I feel really nervous about it. There's going to be more people there than any of the other ones, previous ones I've done. It's only my fifth one, it's early days. And I feel quite nervous about it. But my belief is, even if I mess up, that's for a reason. because that's my worst fear, standing up and messing up in one of my presentations, because it's like, is that going to destroy everything? But it's not. It's a learning. I will face my worst fear. And how cool is that? Because if I can face that and I can continue to live my life with integrity, and that is doing my change work and working with people to create a better life for them, if I can still move forwards, that's a massive accomplishment. And that can be generalized to any aspect of my life, that when I go through something that is emotionally challenging, to know that I can get through that because I've got through that evening, like this evening, if that happened, and I welcome it if it happens. I welcome it because I'll deal with it and I'll face it. So that's the inner world. The inner world, that inner voice, that's the wisdom. And what I'm talking now and expressing, that comes from inside. The emotional would be reacting to, for example, difficulties I had at school when I was put in very embarrassing positions as a punishment by a teacher. This is very relevant here. She would take me into another class and humiliate me in front of that class. I'd have to say what I did wrong. And obviously, it was a traumatic situation for me. Now, there was a time where if I was to stand and give a presentation now as an adult,
yeah,
I would feel so much emotion, I would almost burst into tears because I was still reacting to myself as that child that was humiliated by my English teacher. Now, because I've clean and tidied that up, that's the outer world. That's the emotion that is created through the memories that I used to have of that. So when I was in America training with Paul McKenna training, and I was doing the NLP, the trainer level of NLP where you deliver it. And I got on stage, which was part of the training, in front of about 100 people. And I fought to hold back tears. It was a battle to hold it, and I was just going to lose it. So what I was doing there is still responding to myself as that child, all of that emotion. So that's the outer world. Now, because I've cleared that, I can now be connected to my inner world. So when I'm up there on stage, I don't care what happens. I'm giving it my all. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Because inside, I know that that doesn't define me. It's just an experience I'm having because I want to give and I want to help people. For some reason, it's just built into me. So I'm walking that path. And you know what? If it doesn't work and it fails, that's just how it is. My inner tells me that's fine. Just be who you are in the moment. So that's my inner world. My outer world is the emotional stuff connected to past events that haven't been resolved, or even situations in the present that I'm responding to emotionally because it feels good. That's the emotional outer world.
Okay. So
I've got the inner world and listening.
A couple of questions come up on that then, Vin. So it sounds like there's two positives here for the on stage public speaking thing, right? So one positive is you go on stage tonight, you drop the ball and you forget your words and there's a pause for like a minute, right? And it feels terrible, and then you come off the stage afterwards and you think, oh, I'm still alive, I'm going to get booked for another gig. It was really embarrassing and I felt like embarrassed at the time, but right now I'm cool. I know that if that happened again, I'll be all right. So there's that. But then is the other thing that you said was, you said, if something goes wrong tonight, I know I'll be able to deal with it. That's the second thing. So you're talking to yourself ahead of the event to say, do you know what? If something does go wrong, I know that I will deal with it, right? Now, that to me, I sense then a trust with the voice of your inner world. But what if you don't trust that voice in your inner world?
Then we go into the external or the emotional stuff. What will people think of me? They will judge me. They will think I'm stupid. All of that emotional stuff that will be connected to experiences that I've had in my life, that's what would be coming up.
Right.
In the moment, my inner voice, because I've one of my talks, my mind was a blank and I just didn't do anything. I just stood there like a warrior. Like a warrior, because I stayed with what was happening. I didn't fight it. I didn't run from it. I just stayed with it. And then suddenly a word popped in my mind, and then another word, and I said it, and that triggered more words. And then Then I was on a roll.
Yeah.
Then I was on a roll. So I didn't run from it. So there was a time when, again, I would have been fighting back the tears because of what had happened in the past, because I would have still been reacting to all of that emotional stuff. So now, in terms of this, I'm clear enough where I can stay connected inside, and that will give me my guidance. Whether I stand there, I may stand there for 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And as long as I'm holding that space, people will wait because they will feel it. They will feel that connectedness within themselves because I'm feeling it. I won't have to even say a word because I won't go into fear. I won't run away. I'll stand there and face what is happening in the moment.
That's so, like that's like a confidence. So I mean, I know this isn't, this is, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but I think it's really important for people who are listening to this, is what Vinny's saying there is he goes on stage and he's going to do a speech, but his mind goes blank and he's not quite sure what to say. But rather than kind of like fall apart and go, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't, you know what I mean, or diva, he stands there strong. He used the word a warrior, right? So his body language and everything. And now he's giving off a different energy. And instead of it being a moment where the crowd are going, oh my God, this guy's really screwed up, the crowd are probably thinking, what's going on here? What's going to happen next? What's this guy going to say? He's so confident. And this leads me to think about, Vinny, when somebody has just started, someone's decided that they're not going to drink alcohol anymore, and they go to the pub, say, you know, I don't know, they're 3 weeks in and they go to the pub for the first time, and they're really, really panicking about how they're going to tell their friends that they don't want to drink, right? For me, the person who goes in there like a warrior, who is able to get the right body posture, the shoulders up, the strength back, And that, I think, has to come with some pre-prepared. And you have to be prepared. You have to practice. And this is where Strive comes in, I think. He's like to test his thing. That person is less likely to drink than a person who goes in unprepared.
I agree with you.
And doesn't have the right posture. Because is this, like, I don't know if you found this in school or not, like with being bullied or bullying or whatever, is people pick up on those weaknesses. It's almost like a subconscious thing. Even the nicest, you don't even have to be a nasty person. You can tell when you can dominate somebody in a one-on-one conversation or not. Like, you just know subconsciously, don't you?
We know inside. We know inside. And that is the inner world as well. Hmm. It's leaking out into the outer world all the time. For example, how many times have we known the phones are going to ring before it rings? How many times do we know someone's going to knock on the door? Or we haven't seen somebody for a long time and we have a conversation about them, or we think about them and we bump into them the following day. I mean, what is all that about? And, you know, and these gut feelings and intuition we get about things, often we ignore them and we push them aside and we respond just to emotion, our emotional needs in the moment, or what we think we have to do, or how we think we should be. So this is all the outer world, but the inner world is spilling out to the outer world and calling us all of the time. So when a person takes that drink, that voice inside that says don't do it, that is their inner guidance, the wisdom and the teacher. They're just hearing a faint call, but that it becomes a booming voice. That becomes like a best friend that is guiding us through life, literally. Whether you should pick the phone up or not pick the phone, or whether you should turn right or left, it can become so refined as a teacher. And it will know things before, the amount of things I've done before that logically I should not have known the outcome of that. And it all sounded fantastic. And my gut feeling, don't do it, Vinny. And I did it and it was a complete failure because I wasn't supposed to do it. I should have been doing what I'm doing now. I should have been doing my change work. That is what I was born to do. That's what I should. But I was off doing all these other things. But what I was doing, everything I failed at brought me back to all of the projections I had in myself about not being good enough, not feeling confident, all this stuff that was an illusion based on past traumatic experiences that I had that wasn't even real. Beyond what I was creating in my mind and feeling in my body. Beyond that, it wasn't even real. But to me, it was, and I was responding and responding. Now, every time I had a failure, I had to face my projections. And it got so painful, so difficult, that I completely changed my alignment in my thinking and just threw my hands up. It was like, I cannot do this anymore. I can't do it to myself. I have to do what? I have to be authentic and I have to do my change work. Now this leads, so that's peripheral processing, going through all these different experiences, facing all of my fears, or facing all of my projections and false images of who I was. Now, once I decided to do what I should be doing, then I had to face the more present obstacles, like something like this. I was really nervous about it. Mm. My mind went empty. So this is core processing. So now I'm having this experience. I'm actually processing fear because I am now experiencing evidence to prove to me that I can have an interview and feel confident. I now feel confident. I didn't at the beginning of this interview. It brought insecurities up. They are now being processed as I am communicating with you. At the end of this interview, I will not be the same person as I was before this interview, because my next interview will be far more easier for me to approach and to get into that flow.
That's really interesting.
Constantly processing.
That's really interesting, because I always get nervous before an interview, but I'll get nervous before different interviews. So me and you've only met once before this, but we met over dinner, and because we're both deeply authentic people, we only need a 10-minute conversation. We're exactly, best mates for life.
Exactly.
And if you're listening to this, I'm not joking, right? Because a lot of people stop drinking alcohol and they think they get very lonely and isolated because the people that they used to hang around with, the energy's not right. So they can't hang around with them anymore. And they find it, if they're like, well, I'm going to be lonely and I'm really struggling because I can't socialize. If you find the right person and they're out there, it doesn't take half as long as to get a deep connection as it does with the friends that you had before when you was drinking, because the drinking is somehow fucking with the chi. It's like messing with your energy.
Yeah.
So I get nervous before speaking with Vinny, but I'm not as nervous as, let's say, I'm going to speak to, I don't know, Brian Robson. I interviewed Brian Robson once. I'm super nervous then, because I'm like, oh my God, he's my childhood hero. What if I get this wrong? What if I get that wrong? You know, you do learn to get better and better and better, and you're always going to get different obstacles for very, and I guess what you're saying is this all comes back to some time in your childhood where something happened, and now you're using that narrative now to stop yourself repeating the same pain.
You got it. I believe we are all innately genius. And that's what I believe. Now, if you observe babies and children that haven't been damaged, they're so open, they're so expressive, their imaginations are phenomenal. You know, they can take a box and make it a spaceship, a castle, a racing car, and they're having a whole body experience in that moment. They're so creative, their learning capacity and ability is so quick. And then this begins to change as we get older. And I don't believe it's because we are maturing through the years as a physiological, as a natural physiological change that happens. I feel that we learn not to be like this. We learn not to be as open. We learn not to be as communicative. We learn not to be as free. We learn not to make friends in a moment because we're suspicious and we don't trust. And, you know, rightly so in the world we live in, because we can't be just vulnerable as a child. But my point is, our capacity is huge. And when we go inside and listen inside, we begin to tap into these qualities. So my imagination has now soared. My creativity has soared. My problem solving. My philosophy is that it's always an easier way to do something. Always an easier way. And my brain will automatically seek that out. And I get a real thrill from that. I've become much more open emotionally, much more loving, but in connecting with my masculinity, but also my guess, femininity, I guess, but very expressive. I feel free within myself. My mind feels very free. And it's all come since I tapped inside and kept going deeper and deeper and deeper. And it is like an ocean. It goes on and on and on. And I don't think anybody's reached the bottom. It is so vast. And it's absolutely joyous because it gives life a value that cannot be had from an emotional experience of a thing, an object, or a person. It's always transitory. It always passes. There's always a peak. And then we come down the other side when it's not really a big deal anymore, but it was really exciting. There's none of that. It is consistently joyful. And I'm not suggesting I'm there all the time, because sometimes if I'm triggered, it will take me out of that. I'm still connected in that I can feel it, but it isn't as concentrated. And I do what I need to do to get back there quickly. And then okay.
I want to go back over that a little bit. This morning I took Zia to, my Zia is 2.5. You met her?
I have. But,
the belly dancer, the 2.5-year-old belly dancer. So I took her to a class called Little Notes this morning. So Little Notes is where the teacher gets out a cello and she plays classical music, but turns it into like a, you know, you used to watch those children's programs on TV where they're like the mental kids that would go like 100 mile an hour.
Yeah,
it's like that, but it's like that, but not mental and a lot more cultured and serene, right?
Yeah.
And all the kids are sat around in a corner, but Zia won't sit down. And she won't do what the teacher wants her to do. She wants to do her own thing. She's expressing herself.
Yes.
And I catch myself saying to her, sit down, or don't do this, or follow the teacher. And but while I'm doing it, I'm also cognizant in my mind of thinking, okay, Lee, we need to balance this with allowing her to express her creativity. So she doesn't have to follow rules, you know, to have those conversations. And I look around. I know you said all kids are born like, we're all like innately genius, and you can see where kids are expressing themselves. I saw kids this morning that weren't expressing themselves. And that, at that age, 2 and 3 years of age, that is still coming from parents, society, their culture, their tribe, their family. There'll be something that's going on. You know, like right now, I'll be honest, Vinny, I think I'm raising a little princess, and it's bothering me a bit. I've got like bloody princess dresses everywhere. and I don't want my daughter to be a princess, but at the same time, I want her to do what the hell she wants to do. Why am I saying this? Well, I believe we're all designed to drink alcohol from birth. Like, so we've got, as parents, we have to be massively aware of the potential and the, aware of the influence we have over massaging and channeling this innate genius that Vinny's talking about. Because we can squeeze it out of them.
We can
let it thrive, or it hardens up. And if we're drinking alcohol and we're smoking, we're saying to our kids, hey, it's all right to drink and smoke. And you can't turn around and say to them, it's not okay while you're doing it.
I agree with you.
So I think drinking, smoking, how you behave, how you talk to your wife, how you talk to your husband, how you kind of like, I don't know, deal with life. You really have to be switched on about how we're raising our children.
Conscious parenting. Yeah, I agree with you.
The other thing you said was you talked a lot about intuition, right? Yeah. What is intuition for you, Vinny?
Intuition for me is that inner voice instantly. Now, I use voice as a label, but it can be just a knowing. So for me, it's like a very faint voice with a knowing combined. And it's instant. So it's not as a result of thinking or processing. It is instant. So that's what it is. To me, I think part of that is life experience, and another part is that there's an aspect of us that is a lot greater than what we realize that we're connected to. And I believe this is guiding us every day. We may not choose to listen to it, we may not be aware of it, but I believe it's there to guide us every day. as a feeling inside. So feeling, intuition to me is the same thing, that instant knowing. So again, when I've made decisions to do things that were emotional decisions, and inside, and on the face of it, you'd think it was great, but inside it was saying no. How did that know? How did I know inside? It could be because it wasn't aligned to my integrity, which is to be doing my change work. It was just about making money, which would then free me up to do what I'm doing now. So it could be that I wasn't aligned to my integrity. But whatever it was, has a separate intelligence to this.
When we went out for Debbie Poverino's birthday, Debbie's been a guest on the Alcohol Addiction podcast. You should check it out if you have a problem with smoking. That's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It was hard, and I was like 15, 18 people there, big table. And me and you ended up right opposite each other.
Yeah.
So do you believe that that's just a random fluke, or do you believe that we were supposed to sit next to each other?
Designed that way. Yeah,
it was because it wasn't just me and you, right? My wife's next to me talking to your wife, and they connected and want to be buddies now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So for people listening to this who are going through this change where they want to become someone who doesn't drink alcohol, and they are being ostracized by their community, or they are ostracizing themselves from their community, how do they find the right people? Because obviously...
I've been thinking about this recently to get more clarity on it, because I'm always looking at language in things, breaking things down and finding out what the truth is according to me and my experience and what I can observe and feel, rather than just repeating back what I hear. So I concluded for this is that we have to expose ourselves to information. So if I wanted to create new friends, I would then look at what can I do to create new friends. So I go to the library and I'd find out different groups, and I would listen. So the other half is listening to my intuition. So as I'm reading through these things, my intuition will pick up things. I would separate those off. I'd leave it till the following day. Because the thing with intuition, we can't interfere with it. We've got to catch it. And then it's gone. Then the mind starts getting involved. Then I'd leave it aside. I'd come back to the following day and look at it. And I might ask myself the question, also is another thing, is which one should I go to and just feel? And I guarantee you, if someone asked this question, which club should I go to? Which party should I go to? Which whatever? And just listen, you'll get a gut feeling. And then it's trusting that guidance. So that's another part to all of this, trusting that gut feeling, because we're so used to pushing it away. So in summary, two things: expose ourselves to information, what are our options, and then listen to the guidance of the gut feeling. It's your best friend.
And what advice would you give to people? So let's say people take that, they're scribbling feverishly now, and they're going to go do that. You know, they're going to go to a local coffee shop. They're going to see all these different groups. It's going to be yoga there. There's going to be a meditation class, a painting class, football, whatever. And they do what you just said. Yeah. But then the biggest issue is getting off your ass and going to do it.
Got it.
Right. That's going to stop 99.9% of people.
Mm-hmm. One of the ways around that is to think about the benefits, is to write down all of the benefits. And then the impact they will have emotionally on the person. So for me, so it would be, I need to make new friends. Okay, what are the benefits of me making new friends? So I would list that out. Then how will each one of these make me feel? Now the next stage is closing my eyes and creating that as an experience. So I've got to be genuine in this. I've got to want to do it. You know, there are some people that are so used to suffering, they just want to suffer. Hmm. Now, there's some rewards there because they get attention, they get support, they get help, they feel significant, they feel loved when they're being helped. They always lead with their problems, so they get advice. And when we're getting advice, we're being listened to, we're being valued. So there's some people that are in that camp, and they're not reachable yet. You know, we're all going to cross that line. Whether they're dragged kicking and screaming, we will all be moved in terms of our consciousness to become more, I believe, to resonate at a higher frequency. So we have that camp. The ones that genuinely do, once they find out what the emotions are, they sit down, close their eyes, and imagine that as an experience. So they imagine going to the event. They imagine making new friends. Imagine hanging out with them. And they feel the emotions of that. Now, what they'll do is they'll bring it more into the reality as an experience. So the brain will start to, and the body will start to take on that reality as an emotional experience and as a mental experience. It'll start to become more real. Then the mind will start to become more focused. So they'll have a feeling of just, I want to go, or they'll be more motivated to go. The person will be more focused to go and will be therefore more likely to take action. So if somebody has a goal, if they can see that goal as a completed image or representation, they're more likely to go towards it. If the goal is massive, then it can be a bit overbearing. So they need to cut that. They need to create some smaller goals leading up to the big one. So the smaller goals might be that they literally imagine going to the library, reference library, speaking to the person and asking them for clubs and societies. And they literally sit with their eyes closed and just imagine doing that. Walking in, speak to the person, then they write the information down and they come home. And they might run through that 10 times, but I guarantee you it will increase the motivation. So that's the first part of the goal. And the next one, they start making phone calls. They start inquiring. They just imagine doing that and getting a positive feedback. Again, it will increase their motivation. Mm. And by that stage, they're ready for the bigger goal by that stage.
Now, it's really important you said that. I was having a conversation on Strive with Lisa the other day, and Lisa was saying, now I don't drink. My biggest challenge now is finding people that don't drink, right? Mm-hmm. And I said to her, well, rather than go out and finding them, why don't you create your own non-sober hiking group or whatever? But listening to you, like me just saying that, I mean, come on, let's be honest. Like, that's not easy, right? You need a lot of confidence to do that. So my advice should have been more bite-sized chunks. Like, okay, let's do the visioning about having your own group and what it looks like and the type of people there and the things you're going to do. But have that and do that practice on a daily basis. But for today, just go and join a group. And it doesn't matter if you like the people or not, but getting out of the house and going and sitting down in the group is like a little kind of like a smaller goal than create your own mini version of Strive.
I agree with you.
Sometimes I talk about like things like, so yeah, just give up drinking. Yeah, just leave her. Yeah, just quit your job. You know, and it always, like, folks, I didn't leave her. She left me. I have quit my job. So I know it. I know it's not that easy. So forgive me when I just waffle on or something. What did you talk about there? This all comes back, by everything you're saying though, Vinny, it all comes back to me to the same word, confidence, right? Because like, I got people who come to Strive, they're shot of confidence. They got no confidence. Like, they think the world hates them. They think they're shit. They think they can't get through life without drinking alcohol. They can't do anything. And then we come along and say, go to the library. And they're like, I can't go to the library. They've got no confidence. So, you know, give us some tips here. How can we build people's confidence up? What are the types of things you did? And you've mentioned some of them, but I think this is worth spending a couple of minutes on because it's important. How do we go from being terrified about life and thinking we're shit to thinking we're great and we're wonderful and we're not terrified about life?
Mm-hmm. Well, having been in both places where I am now and being in that place where I had so much emotional baggage, it was untrue, and feeling a real mess and worthless, quite frankly. What I do realize is that we are all super confident, as that's our true identity. What's in the way is what we're reacting to. And then we use labels like, I lack confidence, I have no self-esteem. It's the emotional stuff that is in the way. Now, once that goes, who they really are starts to shine through. Now, we would call that confidence, but it's who they really are starts to shine through.
Okay, whoa, let me stop you there. Well, let me stop you there then, because that's really super important to me. What you're saying there is, we're born with this innate genius and we're also born with this clear, transparent authenticity.
Got it.
So we're not learning to be anything different. We're learning to be who we really are.
We're discovering ourselves. This is part of the journey we are all on. We're experiencing the opposite polarity of who we are. So we are, you know, we are this amazing being experiencing what it isn't. So we go to the opposite side of the polarity, where we experience low self-esteem, no confidence. This is the language we use. No confidence. All this. We're a mess. All of this. We're experiencing the opposite. Now, that journey back to who we are is a journey that we're all on. So one of my lessons was courage. I had to be more courageous. Now, I've always done martial arts and all those things. It wasn't about that. It was emotionally and mentally and being authentic. That's where I lacked courage. Would always sit on the fence, would always hide in the background, hide myself in the background. So one of my life's lessons is courage. That's what I'm facing now. And it's what I'm facing even here with you and this evening to build my, that I'm returning back to courage. So I had no self-esteem, left school, could barely read or write. I was in the remedial class through school. I was told that I was going to be put in a special school because I was less than remedial. An emotional mess. So I have come back on this journey towards who I'm not there yet, towards who I am. But I didn't have to learn anything. It's getting the stuff out of the way. But the question is, how do we get it out of the way?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So we are all these amazing beings. I'll give you an example. Why is it that every single time that I talk somebody down into a deep state of relaxation, why is it that all of them go into a state of bliss? Why is it that all of them end up having profound spiritual experiences? Some go into past lives, some contact relatives that have died and passed over. Others are in the light and experience guides. Others are just blissed out. Why is it that that happens? And I'm not talking once or twice. If they let go and go with the process, they all go to this place. It's just amazing. So they're touching base with their infinite capacity of who they really are. In this world, they have this personality that's formed and developed through life experience along their timeline to this very present moment. They're so identified with all of that. That's who they think they are, but they are not that. They're learning to be. They're learning not to be who they think they are, to arrive back at who they really are, and that is the inner world, which is infinite and contains what I just mentioned, but much, much more than that. So they are learning. They are on the way back to who they really are. So they don't have to learn confidence. They're supremely confident. They have everything. They are learning to, they are processing their emotional stuff that they have gathered from birth forwards and probably prior to that, that had brought in certain energy fields with them into this lifetime. But certainly from birth forwards, what they have gathered along the way, they are now having to process that. So when that person's drinking and they're an alcoholic and they're going through all those traumas and creating havoc in their life, they're revisiting all of their emotional shit, all of their projections, all of their stuff that's inside of them has to come out and be dealt with. It has to be dealt with. And at some point, they will move through that. And if it isn't this lifetime, it will be another. And sorry, that's going a bit woo-woo now, but
woo-woo. No,
they have to go through their stuff. They are processing back to who they really are. And it's the inside who they really are. Having this human experience. But when these two come together, the outside and the inside, so there's enough of this emotional stuff out of the way, it's instant. I have the emotion, I go inside. I have the emotion, I go inside. Not I have the emotion and get lost on the outside in all of this chaos that's been created. It's straight inside and the wisdom knows precisely what to do.
Or with people listening to this podcast, I have the emotion, boom, I need to drink because I don't know what to do. Or I'm completely, utterly afraid about, I don't want to deal with this. So if I drink, I don't have to deal with it because I just end up in la-la land all the time.
Yes, yeah. So they're on a cycle. So they're still in the process. They're on a cycle going through all the emotional stuff, creating more situations in the life, creating more layers of emotion. So it's just new, it's the same emotion they're experiencing over and over again in different ways. The shame, the guilt, the blame, the anger at themselves, anger at other people, blaming themselves, blaming such and such a person for abusing them as a child that they can't get over. If it wasn't for them, I'd be healed today. My life would be fantastic. If it wasn't for my dad telling me I was no good today, I'd be so successful. All of these events that we're reacting to in the past are running in the theater of our mind. We are the director. We play all roles. We are the victim and the perpetrator, the building, the audience, the lighting, all of it. We revisit the emotions over and over again. They're being triggered, re-triggered. The body acts as if it's real, and the story continues. And at some point, we will move through this and be able to arrive at a place of peace and forgiveness if need be, but certainly peace and acceptance, and move through it out of the other end. And that's when we can rest. When we feel the peace or the acceptance, what we're doing is resting inside. In that moment, we're resting. And then we're back outside again, and something else is being processed, and something else. And then eventually we arrive home again. I accept. I forgive you. And I had a big one with somebody that I thought had conned me, but actually it could be unraveling itself at about 30,000. I was enraged, to say the least. I mean, I was like an animal inside about this. And I went through such deep levels of anger, of blame, and guilt, because someone else had invested in the business as well. I hit a point where I could not do it anymore to myself. Mm. And I just gave up. And then I had to go through, I'm not being a man because I'm letting him get away with it.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And all of this. That was just a trap. That was a trap of my own mind keeping me stuck. But what it was is processing. I had to realize that I can walk away and be a man. I can give up and be a man if I'm going to choose peace over anger. I can and still be a man. So this is all processing. So I arrived at a place now where I've taken it to its highest level. I've forgiven him. It seems like it might all unravel. It might be okay. But I got to a place, well, I am in a place, regardless of that, I've forgiven him. I got involved in a business that I knew I shouldn't have got involved with. I opened the door to him so he could engage, if he has conned me, his lower, say, negative behavioral patterns, let's say. I'm responsible, not him, completely me, because he would not have come into my reality if I did not invite him in. He's responsible from looking through his eyes at me for his behavior, don't get me wrong. But, and all of the anger, it was my creation because I wouldn't let it go. I was like a dog with a bone. As a dog with a bone, I wouldn't let it go. I kept reliving it in the theater of my mind over and over and over again. Wouldn't leave it enough. Waking in the middle of the night, sending him all sorts of text messages, not very nice text messages. But now I'm at complete peace with it. But that is a skill now that I have, because I know I can forgive anything. It doesn't mean I would have the person back in my life, but I can forgive any monsters that I create in my mind or have created about someone that's done something terrible to me in the past. I can forgive the monster that I created in my mind. I can let go of all of that. I have learned that gift from that experience because it drove me so deep inside to experience the projections that were already in there as a possibility of how far I can go with anger, that all of it came up and I could not do it. I'd reached the bottom and I couldn't do it anymore. And it all cleared because I found forgiveness and peace.
Yeah, this is the part where a lot of people get stuck, in as much as, let's call this guy Fred, in as much as Fred, is a naughty boy, steals loads of money from you or whatever, a business goes tits up, it affects you and how you can take care of your family and your livelihood and your respectability and you know what people think of you and stuff. So you go crazy, right?
Yeah.
But Fred can't hurt you, right? Like,
Right.
Fred, there's nothing that Fred could do unless he physically assaults you.
Yeah.
Fred can't hurt you.
No.
Now, this is one of the most difficult things that I find working with people who drink, mm-hmm. is that they cannot grasp that concept.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say someone's in a relationship and they've had a 50-year relationship, mm-hmm. and they find out that their wife has had an affair for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Our natural human instincts is to blame her and associate her act with our pain.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there's nothing that she's doing that is causing our pain. It's our thought that is driving the emotion of pain.
Yeah.
But why is it that we feel so reluctant to let go of that and to own it? Why do we feel so desperate to blame someone else?
I think it's natural to have the response, from my understanding. It's how long it lasts for. For some people, it lasts a lifetime. Now, there's four chains, I call them, that can keep people locked into a situation, for example, like that. I call it the GABS model. Basically, it's guilt, anger, blame, and shame. I mentioned them briefly a moment ago. And they are so intense emotionally when we really go there. They are so intense, they become a primary driver in our emotional experience rather than what happened. So for me, the anger took over what happened. I was just in the anger with him. It was almost like that had taken on a life of its own. And I felt justified, because I was so angry, felt justified that I should keep that anger.
Mm.
Or this person did that to me when I was 4 years. How dare they do that to me? How dare they? I was a child. I was a child. It's so, and the shame and the blame, it's so intense as emotion, it locks the person into re-experiencing that memory over and over and over again. And I find as the chains start to fall away, the trauma itself is far easier to let go of and to move on from. So it appears for me, from working with people, that it's those four things, guilt, anger, blame, and shame, that locks us down in an emotional experience that's happened in the past. And we feel so justified in continuing. So justified.
Let's talk about identity a little bit then, and personality, like who we think we are, right?
Yeah.
Because we are. I mean, we are probably. I mean, there's a spiritual version of who we are, and there's a scientific version of who we are,
yeah.
Right? We won't go there for a moment. We might go there later on. But
yeah.
Let me. I'm going to talk about Tony a little bit. Tony, for listening, I'm talking about you here, buddy. And I know it's difficult to talk about a particular person because they're not here and we don't understand that, you know, we don't have the full context, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll use Tony as an example, but we'll respond to it in a more, with more breadth, because everybody yeah. struggles with the same kind of stuff. Now, Tony, whenever we used to work with Tony would always be worried about who he is going to become. Like, mm-hmm. if I stop drinking, I'm mm-hmm. worried about who I'm going to be. Will I like who I'm going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what you're talking about there kind of ties into that, in as much as it, these stories that we're picking up when we're younger, in as much as I was humiliated when I was younger, right.
Mm-hmm.
That all those little stories that's creating our identity, or mm-hmm. what we perceive to be our identity.
Yes, yeah.
And if you come along and sit someone down on your couch and start working with them and say, well, you know, we don't have to play this mm-hmm. this movie in our theater of our mind anymore, mm-hmm. then that's removing their identity. A lot of people will think, mm-hmm. they'll be like, oh, fucking hell, but who am I without this?
Yeah.
Well, you're this wonderful human being who was yeah. born an innate genius with all this creativity
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah.
How do we get them there though? Because yeah. it's difficult to comprehend. You're just yeah. stuck, aren't you? You don't even, actually, you're worse than stuck.
Yeah.
Because you said it earlier on, some victims, the people you said in the suffering
yeah.
pile,
yeah.
they get so much value
yes.
out of their suffering
yes.
that they don't want to change.
Quite.
And again, it's an identity thing. Give us your thoughts on identity. Yeah.
Well, we get used to particular emotional states and they become familiar. Like, really, I think as human beings, we're seeking out what is familiar all of the time. We use the same parking space if we can. We sit in the same chair in a training room if we can. We drive the same way to work. You know, we like to wear certain clothes for certain events. You know, we build up habits very, very quickly. And I think it goes also, I believe it also goes emotionally. We get used to particular emotions. We get used to experiencing them. And we'll actually create situations to experience them. And I'll give you one example, EastEnders. I remember watching EastEnders many, many years ago. Now I find it completely toxic. I actually don't watch television. I like films, but I find it very, very toxic. But one of the things that people are engaging in when they watch EastEnders is the highs and the lows emotionally. Because EastEnders is something fantastic happens, and immediately afterwards, something negative happens. Somebody gets married, they're in the pub. Somebody comes out of the pub, they get run over. Everyone in the pub comes out of the pub, the ambulance. So they're completely taken on this roller coaster ride. Now, anybody that watches EastEnders on a regular basis, you take away their EastEnders from them and see what happens.
Yeah.
Take away their EastEnders from them and you see what happens. You turn EastEnders, you turn it off and put something else on and look at their reaction. They will have a craving for that emotional reaction. It's the same thing. Highs, lows, highs, lows. Gambling works in exactly the same way. High, low, high, low, high, low. Facebook, high, low, high, low, high, low. Same thing. Looking for likes. Don't get your likes. Feel down. Get your likes. Feel happy. High, low, high, low. So we get familiar with emotional states as well as physical objects around us, as well as locations. Get familiar with these things. So we're wired to do things that are familiar. So, I have lost my thread.
I do that all the time.
Right.
EastEnders takes you on an up and down, and we're always stuck on this. We're addicted to our emotions.
Yeah, we did. Okay, all right. So some people will be so used to feeling down, they don't know who they really are. So they're so used to having that. And they will often seek out situations in their life where they can re-experience these emotions as well. So if dramas aren't coming to them, they will quite often create dramas just to have the emotional experience. Often that's a distraction from what they really should be looking at. And that is the truth and what's going on inside of them and how they really feel. And are they living authentically in accordance to their inner guidance, really? Are they really listening to that voice? Or are they living in their distractions? So, I want to see twice now. Sorry.
Vinny, you're a warrior.
Sorry, my friend. I'm cool about it. I'm just trying to catch where I am. Right, okay. So how do we move? How do we move from that place of where we're just used to being this particular way and discover our real identity? Now, how I would do that is to get a person connected to themselves. So when I do, say, a deep relaxation, my intention is to get them out of their own way. So I need to get them out of the, if you will, the outer world, which is a reflection of the brain and the brain responses. I need to get them out of the brain and into their body for a whole body experience. But then I need to take them inside where the body doesn't even exist anymore. Take them deep inside so they can have some very profound experience. So they can have a profound experience of themselves. That connects them to something they haven't been connected before. Now, when they come out, they still have a connection to that. And that's a good reference point for that I would describe to, I would say to them, this is who you really are. I haven't put this inside of you. I haven't done anything except get you out of your own way. So this is what is inside of you. So compare this as a feeling to all of the mental, emotional stuff that's been going on in your life, or how you had been walking through life, all that stuff you'd been carrying around with you. Compare this to that. And how would you describe, who are you when you're feeling this? Who are you? So I'll have them just talk to me about who they are in that experience, when they're having that experience, how they feel when they come out of that experience. So who are you really?
It's really interesting because you can tell by just having this conversation with you that, you know, I'm 45 now. So all my experiences leading up to 45, all my emotional highs and my lows, I used to watch EastEnders back in the day when I had a telly. So I'm part of that cultivation theory. And also, you know, the things that happened to me in my life, getting divorced, moving to Wales when I was younger, being racially abused, et cetera, and all that kind of stuff. You can't help but notice now talking to you that what is actually happening is traumatic event, traumatic event, traumatic event, traumatic event, traumatic event. It's almost like every movie, every storyteller knows that a movie has to have a certain, you know, Joseph Campbell, hero's journey, et cetera, et cetera. We need a villain. We need a hero. We need a theme. We need an all is lost moment. We need an epiphanal moment. We need a treasure at the end. You know, that's your framework. It sounds like in our life, in order for us to be fucked up, pardon my French, is part of this is we need trauma, we need trauma, we need trauma, we need trauma. And trauma isn't, I've just lost my child. Trauma isn't, my husband just died. Trauma isn't, trauma could be, my mum moved me to Wales when I was 10 and I left all my kids behind in England. I'm actually pretty confident that all the so-called negative parts of me that people pick out, I've been called narcissistic in the past, cocky, arrogant, aggressive, violent, a little man syndrome. I'm pretty confident all that comes from being 10, being moved from England to Wales, being super popular, and suddenly nobody knowing me, me not knowing anybody, everybody calling me names, and that is such a traumatic experience that we generally in life cast it off as just part of growing up. Oh yeah, yeah. So we had to move. We weren't like you moved to Abu Dhabi. You moved to Wales. You know. So that's what we're talking about here. Is trauma, about. Right?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And I used to think that. Looking back on myself, I was a real mess. And I have said that. I said that before I was a real mess. But actually, there was just one or two patterns that were running right through my personality that generalized from my childhood all the way through my personality. Now, because I'd been pushed down a lot as a child and repressed and made to feel that I had very little worth in different ways. School was a nightmare for me in different ways. I developed certain characteristics, just as you're saying, quite a number of them that were quite destructive, but they're all linked to the same pattern. So I used to think that if somebody was a mess, they had lots of different, I just thought they had loads of different issues, but they've not. There's one pattern that's running through. Yeah. There's one or two patterns that run through from the childhood that's been showing up in different experiences along their timeline. And if you run a thread between all of them, you'll find it's just one or two patterns of behavior that has been creating chaos in their relationships, in work, in terms of their health, in terms of the well-being, the communication. It's only one or two. People are not a mess.
I'm thinking about my, you just highlighted mine is being seen. Dad, see me. Kids see me. So what do? I get on stage and I'm the Artful Dodger because I want to be seen. You know, when I fight with Liza and I'm really, really angry with her and I'm shouting at her, I'm using my voice to belittle her, I want to be seen. Why have I got a podcast? I want to be seen. You know? And people say, well, that's narcissistic. It's not narcissistic. It's just some little kid who didn't get what he needed from his dad when he was younger.
Exactly. And look at all the good you're doing in the world.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying. Hey, well, Vinny, and all that come from one emotion. Disappointed. I never asked you anymore. Right, Vinny, we're gonna finish off.
Yeah.
Just by summarizing a little bit. If somebody has done a lot of really good work at Strive and they've become someone who doesn't drink alcohol and then they're hit by a really super traumatic experience. They have a miscarriage or They go through a divorce, or they lose their job, or they lose a leg, whatever it is, and they need help. What is it that you do to help?
Well, first of all, if they were to revert back to drinking, it's a coping mechanism. It's a very familiar coping mechanism. And it's obviously worked to some degree in the past, even though the downside was very negative. But it had worked before. It's a good distraction. So what are they distracting themselves from? The emotion associated to the experience. So what I do, or what I would advise, is that they work with somebody that is very good at releasing the emotional charge associated to a memory that we are running within the theater of our mind. Because again, no matter what it is, it happened once and only once. Now, that doesn't mean that suddenly it's not a problem. Because if somebody's lost a child, it's huge. If somebody's divorced, it's huge. But what it can do is take out the bulk of the... I go for complete removal. That's what my expectation is. So they can find a place of peace and acceptance. And if it's a loss of a child, for example, which I've had before, where the mother felt a love connection and the grief was gone. And she felt, when her eyes were closed, she felt a baby was with her. She still had that connection was back. Yeah. It was obscured by grief. So what I would suggest is that they go to a practitioner or myself or whatever, whomever, that has a skill in separating negative emotion from a memory, or to reduce it significantly. Now, once we get it down, they don't need the coping mechanism. Hmm. It's because they're at threshold, or they've gone over threshold. They need something to bring it down as a distraction. So the idea is to bring it down in a healthier way. So the person comes to me, and they communicate unconsciously. They say, oh, I just this pain is so deep inside of me. Well, they're showing me where the pain is. I get them to close their eyes, go inside. As you feel the pain inside, how far does it go? You tell me how far it goes. If this feeling has a color now, what color do you notice? It's black. And as I say, it goes all the way inside and it's black. If it has a smell and a taste now, just notice, what do you smell and taste? Their eyes are closed. And they might say it's rotten and putrid. Now, once we've got that emotion in a more tangible form like that, very easy to work with from that moment forwards. I mean, we're coming to the end now. I mean, I could explain that, but it's very easy to actually release that emotion. That would leave a space, an empty space. Then we would fill that with light. So connect them to the light, the divine, bring the light through the top of their head into that space. Instruct their superconscious mind to release memories, positive memories. If it was a death, there'd be positive memories before that death happened, to release them into the light so they can go inside and fill the space that's left behind. Then, the end of that process, they open their eyes, I distract them. I might comment on the shoes or something they're wearing, just something to distract them, and then I'd bring them back and say, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to think about whatever it was. I want you to think about this. And I'll look at what their response is, their unconscious body response, facial expressions, tone of voice, body language, and then hear from them what their first response is. Now, once that emotion is gone, they cannot go back. It is not imagination. It is not me saying, I want you to visualize. It's not that. Mm. I need to keep them out of the way. So they observe it happening. I'm getting them to observe this process happening because I'm bringing in other aspects of themselves. Their more greater self is getting involved in the process. So as that color is drained, as that is draining out of the body, a very simple method that I one of many, I'll have them observe that process. And when the light's coming in, they'll see it coming in and feel it. And when the photos come in, I get them to count out loud each one so I know that they're going in there. At the end of that, they are nowhere near threshold. They don't need a coping mechanism because they're not responding to a painful emotion anymore. It's okay. You know, they're in a place it's okay, or it's just not there anymore completely. But I'm looking for at least it's okay. I'm looking, I can live with this, I can get on with my life. That's the worst scenario for me, but I'm looking for real clearance completely. So somebody that can release emotion associated to past memories.
Forget somebody. We want Vinnie Grant, man.
On me, of course. Yeah.
I used to have a black putrid kind of mass in my chest that used to say, I'm a bad dad. And I'm about to leave you now, Vinnie, to take my boy to watch Godzilla and buy him a new suit because it's just finished his A-levels. I don't have that black mass anymore. I know I fucked up as a dad, but I know I'm also an amazing dad. So I'm going to go be an amazing dad. The light came in a little bit. Wish you all the best tonight, Vinnie, in your talk. I'm sure you're going to smash it, as my boy says.
Thank you. Let's
hope we could do some work together in the future.
Can I give my Facebook?
We'll put your Facebook page there, Vinnie Grant Facebook. Yeah. We'll put a link on there as well, and we'll get Vinnie into Strive, so maybe people could do some work with him as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I could create some audios, some emotional audios. People can listen to them and release emotion at home.
We're doing a big change in September the 1st. We're going to a subscription system. People are going to be paying £40 a month to join Strive. It's going to be like a Netflix. Lots of everything that we've done in the past, the taster, the intensive, the cave that we're creating at the moment, all those are going to be on there. And hopefully we can work with people like Vinnie to get some Strive originals out there as well. How does that sound, Vinnie?
That'd be fun. Wonderful. My pleasure, my friend.
All right. You have a great day, Vinnie.
Thank you, Vinnie. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.